You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Business Day Spotlight podcast. This is our weekly podcast just focusing on some of the big business issues in and around the South African economy. My name is Muliwa Gavaza, and I'll be your host. Today we are, you know, last week we were talking sort of hard economics, you know, where's the country going, GDP figures. The week before that, we're talking US-China trade relations. But today we're sort of, you know, delving into the world, into some legalities. We're getting into the courtroom. We're getting into some environmental work. And we are joined on the line by Bobby Peake, who is executive director at Groundwork, just to give us maybe a bit of an update history and an understanding about a case that they have at the moment. And he's just going to tell us what's been going on. And they have been working together with Vukani Environmental Justice Movement in Action, as well as the Center for Environmental Rights. How are you, Bobby?
I'm fine. And thank you for allowing us this opportunity to have a discussion with you.
Thank you so much. So could you just let us know what's going on in terms of the case? Perhaps for those people that don't know what the deadly air case is about, where all of it started from, and then where we are today.
Thank you. So back in 2007, the then Minister of Environmental Affairs declared that the Mpumalanga Highveld area and parts of Gauteng suffers from poor air quality. And the statement, and I quote, was, "There was little doubt that people living and working in these areas do not enjoy air quality that is not harmful to their health and well-being." So that is really important. So the department makes the statement. The department comes to this conclusion. Obviously, you know, we were, as Groundwork and as communities in the Highveld and communities throughout the country in South Durban and other places where we work, we've been saying air pollution is a problem. So the minister then puts in place the Highveld priority area system to be able to get the Department of Environmental Affairs to focus on cleaning up the air in that particular area. So that is 2007. 5 years later, the minister publishes a management plan to give meaning to that area. But since then, since 2007, even with this plan, little has changed. And so we have been talking to government, and we, you know, 19 months ago, we published a report with the Center for Environmental Rights, Broken Promises, basically doing an analysis of government's positions and said, you have not cleaned up. We asked government for a response to this, and they haven't responded formally. And then in May this year, they responded and said, no, there's no problem. So we had to then, obviously, after all these years of talking, all these years of there being no pollution reduction, and in all these years where people have been dying because of the pollution, we had to go to court, and we went to court on two of the issues. Firstly, we are saying in the court papers that the levels of ambient air pollution in the Highveld area is in breach of Section 24A of our constitution that guarantees us a right to an environment that's not harmful to one's health and well-being. And secondly, that the minister's refusal to prescribe regulations to address the poor air quality in this area is a breach of the minister's statutory and constitutional obligations. And that's why we're going to court on those two issues.
So in terms of your organization, how did you guys actually become, you know, part of the legal action?
So we as Groundwork have been working in the Mpumalanga area since 1999. We have been working with communities in Witbank, in Middelburg, in Ermelo on a regular basis. And we've been working with these communities, with government, and we've been putting pressure on industry to reduce their pollution. And Eskom and SASL are two of the biggest polluters in this area. So we've been in regular communication, and we've been working quite quite vocally. So it's not unknown that there are these problems in this area. So it's been a constant battle. Government knows about it, and therefore they should be taking action on this. And because they haven't been taking action, we have to obviously now go seek redress from the courts.
And I think one of the issues, especially in terms of headlines, that's come out in the last, couple of days, week or so, is the fact that the president himself has been implicated or named somehow in all of this. Where does he fit in?
So I think it's really important to recognize that, you know, in 2007, I think under Martinus van Schalkwyk's watch, this area was considered dangerous and polluted, and he set in place this process called the High Veld Priority Area. Subsequent to that, with a variety of different ministers, with the ministers not actually fulfilling their constitutional responsibilities. And so we got to this year, and we decided it's important that the president also recognizes that this is a challenge for governance. And he, you know, President Cyril Ramaphosa is head of our state. He is head of, he makes decisions that will obviously impact upon the entire governance, government and public, you know, throughout South Africa. And as a result, we've asked him so that because if we only took the environmental affairs department to court, probably they would have sidestepped it and, you know, given reasons why they can't do something. But now, yeah, it's all of government.
Yeah, because what I was then going to ask is, you've now named the president, and it seems your first port of call was the minister. Have you guys faced any issues by the fact that you're probably not dealing with either the same seat holder in terms of the minister or revolving staff members in the ministry because 12 years is a long time.
It's a very long time, and I think some of the staff members have been there for a very long time, and the staff members in the Department of Environmental Affairs at one level are the advisors to the minister. So I think, you know, the minister and the president really need to look at how the staff within the department is advising the political heads of the department as well as the president on what to do in these areas. So that's the one thing. The reality in terms of ministers changing, we can't hold that as an excuse for inaction by government. Government is government, and ministers will change. But the reality is that you can't keep on, and you know, the president minister of environmental affairs, Creasy, has suggested that we should talk about this as you know, outside the court process. And I think, you know, time for talk is over now. We've been at this for a very long time. There's enough of a record. There's enough public opinion. There's enough impact felt on the ground by the poor. We must remember that, you know, people, you know, the research by Dr. Andrew Gray highlighted that up to 650 people die because of the pollution, die prematurely because of the pollution from these facilities. So we cannot just talk about it. We have to act, and therefore we went to court, and therefore the minister has to agree that what we ask for is legitimate, get that as a statement and as a finding in court, and then we can talk. But we're not going to pull back and say, okay, let's now talk. No, I think it has to go to court. It has to be finalized, and then we can talk about going forward. Must remember that we have been talking to the department already for more than a decade.
So for you guys, in terms of where you actually want to see like an outcome, what's a worthy outcome? Because I'm sure, as you said, there's already a massive human cost that's already happened. You said 650 people. That's already 650 people, way too many. In an ideal world, what would you like to see done?
So let's just look at, I think it's important to look at the figures, because this is really critical. There's been a variety of different pieces of research, and we know research that looks at health and the economy. And a couple of years ago, you know, we got Dr. Mike Holland looking at the impacts of coal-fired power plants in South Africa. Dr. Mike Holland works for the world. He has worked for the World Bank, the European Union, etc. So he is quite a respected international health economist. And his conclusion was that the cost to society for the Eskom pollution on only one pollution is in excess of 30 billion rand a year to society. So there's a lot of human cost here. There's a lot of taxpayers' cost because people get ill and then they have to go to hospital and the taxpayers pick it up. So that's the first cost. It's a societal cost. It's about health. And when you're unhealthy, you can't work. I mean, let's remember, if you have to drive the economy, you have to drive it on healthy people. If you're unhealthy, you can't work. 37% unemployment rate, it's a big issue. And a lot of people, we have evidence from a lot of people on the ground who say we can't get jobs in the industry because when we apply and we have to go through a health certification and we don't pass that health certification because we are ill. Why are we ill? Because of the pollution in the area. So it is affecting the economy, you know, quite hectically. So the ideal outcome is to, number one, make sure that the polluting facilities, either those that cannot be retrofitted with equipment to reduce the pollution, that those facilities are closed. And that's really important to recognize. Secondly, because it's a lot about energy and Eskom's coal-fired power stations, that process has to happen what we call a just transition. So as Eskom's coal-fired power stations come down, we know that it will create unemployment, but it doesn't have to, because you have to rehabilitate the land from the mining. You have to decommission Eskom's coal-fired power station. You can't just close the fire power station and fire the workers. That's what Eskom wants to do. But what you have to do is close the coal-fired power station and get the workers to take it down. And that takes many years of more work. But critically and finally, in a space in South Africa where renewable energy is coming on now cheaper than coal-fired energy, we need to be able to shift the economy to renewable energy. And we have to do this in a way that is just for people, creating more jobs, creating more opportunities for township people, and critically getting energy cheaper to the poor in South Africa. Our energy is expensive because of coal-fired power stations. We must remember that Medupi and Kusile, when Alec Irwin in 2005 put this on the table, it was 30 billion rand each. Today, Kusile is more than 220 million billion rand, and Medupi has cost us more than 180 billion rand. So, you know, coal energy is expensive and people are not getting energy on the ground. So we need a new energy revolution to basically make this economy work.
So from you, from your end, because I'm just taking what you're saying and I'm thinking that there's probably two parts that are open here, because the issue of energy is quite a deep one in the economy. And at the moment, Eskom represents one of the biggest country risks to South Africa. And on the one hand, making an argument to shut down some of the coal-fired power stations at a time when there is a deficit of power might sound like a bit of a tough sell, you know, especially given everything that the country is going through. What sort of reception, or have you received any resistance that, you know, has to do with that, where people are saying that you surely can't be arguing that these things need to be shut down?
Yeah, I think that is a real issue on the ground. Let us not hide behind that reality, that there are many people that depend on Eskom for work. Workers work at Eskom. Workers work in the coal mines. And we know now, even besides what we are dealing with now, that the coal industry is losing thousands of jobs every year because the use of coal is decreasing globally, not as fast as we would like, let me be clear. And what's happening is as the price of coal reduces on the open market, workers just get fired. Workers just get laid off. So nobody's saying to the workers, well, the coal price is dropping. You're going to be out of a job. Let's see if we can put you in another job. No. So corporate capital, if there's no profit to be made, they're moving. They're not going to worry about the workers. And so that's happening now. And what we are saying is we have to be able to make sure that that doesn't continue. So when these coal-fired power stations close, government has to set in another economy to be able to make sure that, one, the place is cleaned up, and the as I said early on, these plants are decommissioned in the correct way. Secondly, that we have to start a new economy on renewable energy, and to be able to make sure that people still have economic value in that particular part of the world. And that's really critical for us. So, you know, government as it stands now, in 2010, we said to government, and we said specifically to the World Bank, do not give South Africa $3.75 billion to build more coal-fired power stations because it's going to cripple the economy. That was in 2009 and 2010. They said we are scaremongering. They said we are just northern NGOs with a northern agenda. 9 years later, that loan has resulted in us in Eskom being crippled. We cannot pay that loan back. You know, Eskom needs money to pay those loans back. We know that these plants have come in way over budget. We warned about that. We have to pay this back in dollars. Our rand has dropped from 8 rand to a dollar. It's now sitting at 15 rand to a dollar. Imagine what we have to pay. We said it's going to pollute. They said, no, it won't. And now we know that, you know, these plants are polluting throughout the country, and it's very costly to put pollution equipment in on them. So we warned that this would be a problem. So what's the solution? The solution is this, I think. South Africa is going to be talking to the financial institutions throughout the world. South Africa is going to be talking to bilaterals with other governments to try and assist them through this crisis. And as far as we are concerned, it's critical that any new investment on energy by financial institutions globally, as well as, you know, foreign governments into South Africa, needs to push a renewable energy process so that we have money to transform our energy market and take us through a transition. We cannot continue be investing on coal.
One of the things that I'm now sort of gauging is the fact that, you know, some of these things have been quite sort of long term. And you mentioned the fact that you guys warned the World Bank and other international monetary services not to give South Africa a certain amount of money for coal-fired power stations. And you've already sort of highlighted what actually needs to be done to sort of help the problem. My question is, if the course does not change, where can we see the country going? Because you've spoken about the fact that it's taken 9 years for people to sort of get to a stage where people's eyes are finally open. But if we maintain the status quo for another 9 years, what could that potentially mean for the economy and people working in and around some of these coal-fired power stations?
If we ignore the fact that society is going to change and we try and keep our society in this present mode, we are going to be faced 10 years from now when everybody around us has changed and they're back onto a different economy and the economies are working and the systems are working, and we'll still be stuck in a type of old archaic system. So South Africa has the opportunity now, because these coal-fired power stations are old, South Africa has the opportunity now to shift the system, and I think there's enough goodwill globally with other governments in terms of supporting South Africa's transition with IFIs. There's enough positive possibilities out there to reinvest and rejig South Africa's economy. If we don't do this, what's going to happen is we're going to get workers losing jobs slowly but surely, consistently, and 10 years from now, our unemployment rate, when the coal mining sector completely bombs out, our unemployment rate is probably going to be sitting at 47% or 50%, because we haven't thought about, just think, how many workers work in the mining industry? And we know Gold went through crisis. Asbestos went through crisis. Coal is now the next crisis. And so I've been working with the National Planning Commission, as many others in the country. And we've convinced the National Planning Commission to look at Mpumalanga as a key focus area on how you can develop an economy that gives South Africa a good, just transition. That means we recognize that the coal jobs are coming to an end. We need to put in the place new economies. And you know, what do? When you close down the coal mines, you can't plant mealies on those coal mines because the coal has destroyed the land. But what you can put on there are solar farms, you know, solar panels to create more energy. So there's a piece of land that is destroyed by coal mining, but it doesn't have to be doomed. You can put renewable energy on there. You can develop renewable energy industries in making the solar panels in Mpumalanga. You know, instead of importing stuff only from China, we can set up place maintenance systems for rolling out photovoltaic energy systems in poor townships. Why is it not that every poor household in this country should have a PV panel on their roof? Because what it does is it creates energy during the day when nobody's at home, and it can feed that energy into our system. Suddenly we got a whole lot of energy. Imagine one roof, one panel throughout the country. We will be able to recreate Eskom in a completely different way with much more energy than Eskom has now.
It actually sounds quite dire. And I like the fact that with almost everything that you talk about, you're actually bringing possible solutions to the table. So finally, the sort of last question to round off the discussion is there any recourse for workers that have been working in this particular environment? You mentioned earlier on that there are people who've moved from those areas and want to get jobs in other places, and they don't pass those particular health checks, the medical assessments and the like. So it means the people that are working in those environments might be at risk at the moment. Is there any recourse that they can take, whether it's, you know, against the companies or government for working too slowly to resolve the issues? Is there any recourse?
Well, I mean, it's a very difficult question that, and there's no easy answer to that. And I, as my philosophy in organizing and campaigning, is that we have to have a collective justice. So that you can't say, well, it's like apartheid. Apartheid affected all of us as black people. And I can't say I was affected more than you because my skin was a bit lighter than yours and I was in Lanesia rather than in Soweto. You can't argue like that. You have to argue for collective justice for all of us. And so I think it's the same with air pollution and the impacts on society in Mpumalanga. There has to be a collective justice brought to bear in Mpumalanga. And that means, for instance, government saying, okay, how are we going to create new economic zones? How are we going to create better health facilities? How are we going to create better educational facilities? And when we talk about a just transition as groundwork, we don't only see a just transition as just energy. We say we need better homes, homes that do not need to, where we are not burning coal inside the homes, homes that keep poor people warm in winter. We need better transport systems so people have clean, healthy transport systems and they can walk to work if they need to walk to work. We need better services so that people have access to water and have access to good roads. We're talking about food. You know, we need a new food system so that people can create and develop their own food rather than only rely on buying food. So there's a whole lot of things about a just transition that we want to pull into this Mpumalanga area, which I think needs a collective justice approach rather than an individual approach. The difficulty, finally, with air pollution, and you know, this is where, to be honest, you know, the people can't understand. We have the stats that people are dying, but air pollution doesn't kill you like a gun. A gun shoots, it gun has killed you. Air pollution is insidious. It filters through people. You die 5 years earlier than you should have. You know, I suffer from asthma. Maybe I could die if a lot of sulfur dioxide is dumped upon me. I could die immediately because I have an asthma attack. But the deaths on air pollution, it's the poor, it's the young, it's the old that suffer the most. You're not living to 50, you're living to 45. Or suddenly you get, you know, cancer when you're 75. So it's a very difficult thing, and that's why a collective response is needed.
Okay. Thank you so much. That was us on the line with Bobby Peake, who is Executive Director of Groundwork, letting us know a little about the history and the current position of the deadly air case that they are working on together with Vukani Environmental Justice Movement in Action, as well as the Center for Environmental Rights. I think one of the biggest takeaways from what Bobby is saying is just the fact that there needs to be a collective justice, and the big point he's making is that people might not know that air pollution is affecting them, because unlike a gunshot, which is immediate, this is something that happens over an extended period of time, but it's still deadly nonetheless. Bobby, how can people either get in touch with you or actually get involved with the case or the movement if they want more information?
So Groundwork works with a variety of organizations under a banner called Life After Coal. So if you just type in Google Life After Coal, you'll get to the Life After Coal website. You can get to the Groundwork website. Just call us, Center for Environmental Rights and Earth Life Africa. These are the organizations that, with Vukani, are at the forefront of trying to deal with this. And we welcome anybody who is prepared to assist us in any way whatsoever, from interns at times helping us, to lawyers who want to do pro bono work, and to community people who just want to tell the world what is going on the ground. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So that was us, as I said, with Bobby Peake from Groundwork, and that's been it for today, discussing a little bit around that case. So that's it for today. Thank you so much to everyone who's been listening. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Life under the title Podcast Business Day Spotlight. On Twitter, our hashtag is #BDSpotlight, and you can subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts costed. So that's it for today. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza, together with our producer Paige Muller. Remember that Business Day Spotlight is a multimedia live production.